Before we get started, just a quick note to say that some of the names in this podcast have been changed to protect their identities, but the stories you are about to hear are very real indeed. Please check the episode show notes for trigger warnings, as listener discretion is advised. If you'd like to share your story on the Affair podcast, please email our wonderful producers on affair@curvemedia.com. Welcome to The Affair Podcast. I'm Anna Williamson. Now, if you don't know me, I'm a relationship therapist, coach, and TV personality. Now, this podcast will unveil the secrets behind modern day affairs as we explore everything from emotional affairs to rebuilding trust after betrayal. One in five people have admitted to having an affair, but it's a topic that is rarely explored and remains taboo because it sparks such powerful emotions and judgments. Each episode features a different real-life affair story told by the people involved and offers insights into the emotions, causes, and consequences of infidelity in today's world. From the motivations behind affairs to the impact on relationships, we'll uncover the raw truth behind one of the most painful aspects of human relationships. So, without further ado, let's meet today's guest. Joining me on The Affair on this episode is Becky. Hello to you, Becky.
Hi.
Thank you for coming on my podcast to share with us your story. Firstly, I mean, this is an absolute Bobby Dazzler of a shocker, quite honestly. And full disclosure, as I often say, when my lovely guests like yourself come on the podcast, and myself and lovely producer Naomi are listening to people that want to come and share, I deliberately only get a snapshot because I like to hear the whole story unpack in real time along with the listener. But from the tiny snippet that I have read about your situation, never have I felt like I wanted to give somebody a hug so much in my life.
No.
So then, Becky, with that, there are typically three protagonists, three characters, if you like, within an affair. Mm-hmm. The one who's having the affair, the person who has been cheated on, and the other person. Which of those roles do you take in your story?
In my story, I am the one that was cheated on. But if I was being truthful, the way the relationship started, I was the other woman. So That's how, I guess, that sets the scene for how we got together in the first place.
Right. Okay. Well, then let's set that scene. So take us right back then to the beginning of your experience.
Yeah. So we met at work. I was in my early 20s. I'd been off for a period of time with ill health, and he had started at work when I was off, and we met, we became very good friends. He was a bit older than me, so he was 7 years older than me, so he was in his late 20s. He was in a relationship, had a girlfriend, they lived together, not married, and we started, I guess that line got blurred between friends and something more. And he ended that relationship, his other relationship, fairly quickly. There was an overlap, but it didn't go. It wasn't a long-standing affair. He came clean, told her that there was another person, and that's really where our relationship started.
Did you face any judgment from anybody, or was it fairly okay transition?
I think there were a few friends who probably were more skeptical of him than I was, and I understood that. I saw where they were coming from. That was hard, because when you get into a new relationship, all you want is your kind of friends and family to like the person that you're with. So I found that maybe difficult to begin with, but I think as people saw us grow, that feeling of hesitancy dissipated.
And so around that time then, so you're with him, and then talk about kind of what else your kind of family and social circle was like, you know, with your family and your friends, mm-hmm. because this plays a part in your story.
Yeah, absolutely. I would say his friendship circle was very small. He integrated more into my friend circle, socializing. I'm very lucky. I have a lot of good, very good friends, mostly stemming from school. But a few friendship groups from the same school, strangely enough. And So yeah, we had a very good social life. I saw friends. We saw friends all the time, as you do in your 20s. You know, no one's got children. No one's settled down. Everyone's got all this ample spare time that you don't seem to have when you as you get older. So most weekends spent with our friends, families, very much integrated. I was very close to his sister, and he had a very young niece and nephew who I would call my niece and nephew, was close to his mum. And likewise, the other side, him close to my family. So yeah, very normal, healthy social and family life, I would say.
Tell us about, in particular, your best friend.
Yeah, so we were school friends. I was, as always in a big group of girlfriends, there's always some that you're closer to than others. So I would say there was a core group of eight of us. Within that circle, some of us were closer to each other. So this girl who I would deem my best friend, we'd been best friends since we were 11. So all through secondary school together, into our 20s. As I mentioned previously, I'd suffered with very ill health in my early 20s. She'd been there through that journey with me and very much by my side, as were others. But she was the one. She was my go-to. She was my, 3 a.m. need a friend, need to pick the phone up to someone. She was that person to me. She, as we went through and I got married to my ex, she was my maid of honor, so she stood next to me on my wedding day. So yeah, very much.
She was your girl. Yep. You say maid of honor. Yep. And you just mentioned there, yeah, you know, when you got married to him, she was very much part of your wedding party. She was the maid of honor. And prior to that as well, how sort of integrated within you and your husband was she? Did she hang out a lot with you guys? Did he see her much?
I wasn't aware of any time they spent alone together. It was very much with me there. But yes, we spent a lot of time together as part of a bigger group with other friends and their partners. She wasn't in a relationship. She'd never had a relationship as far as I was aware. I say as far as I was aware because I would like to think at the time I would have categorically said that wasn't the case, but there's parts of her life that obviously now I know that I wasn't aware of. But no, she wasn't in a relationship. However, yeah, she stayed around my house a lot. We'd socialise as a three sometimes. And people do ask me now, did I ever notice them being closer than I felt comfortable with? No, I think, again, maybe naive, but I think they were no more than what you would hope that your best friend and husband, the relationship you would hope your best friend and husband had. They were close, not inappropriately close from what I could see anyway. And it felt normal. It felt fine. It felt like it was a good thing that we could all socialize together and be as, you know, it wasn't segregated in that I had time with my husband, time with my friends. It was all as one. The only time, you know, they would both go outside and have a cigarette together. That would be the most I would ever say that of time they spent together. That was the
right.
But not any comments that I found weird. I didn't find it strange that neither of them spoke excessively about one another. It was like, oh, that's a bit weird. You keep mentioning, not at all. Even with hindsight, and I've done a lot of thinking over the years of, did I read that situation wrong? Or sometimes you kind of inwardly look and think, was I being naive? Was I love is blind, as they say? Was I a bit kind of stark? You know, I don't know, but no.
No.
Even with hindsight.
I think you're absolutely right to trust in your gut instinct, you know, and to trust in, yeah, how that was for you. Because also as well, when you're not looking for something either, why would you have been looking for anything? Mm-hmm. You know, we trust at face value a lot of the time, particularly when it comes to those nearest and dearest to us. Those are the ones that typically we place most of our trust. So it wouldn't be in our nature to second guess that, you know, our antenna wouldn't be up because it just feels like the unthinkable, right? Mm-hmm. So then tell us about the wedding day. So you got engaged, you got married, and then on that wedding day, I mean, on wedding days tends to be the key people in the wedding party make speeches. Yeah. And so what was that like for you?
Yeah, so I would say, you know, very typical wedding day, lovely day. A great day was had by all. She did a speech at my wedding. It felt maybe not a conventional in the conventional wedding sense, the maid of honor doing a speech, but I kind of wanted the equal to the best man speech, if that makes sense. So she stood up and did a speech, and it was very much focused on you know, everything I'd been through in terms of health and the, you know, a very tough 20s. So I got married when I was about 28. A tough 20s and how I deserved the world. And it was very clear that he made me very happy and we made each other happy, and that's all she wanted for me. A lovely speech. Wrote a very similar toned letter to me on my wedding morning, as did my husband. Saying all the things she would expect that type of letter to say on your wedding day. Felt lovely.
You're my one and only. Absolutely. You're absolutely my love of my life. You know, all very overt and demonstrative and loving, as one would expect. Yeah, right. Yeah. Yeah. You're the center of these people's universe.
As most people would say, it was the best day of my life, and there was nothing untoward on that day or for a good while after. And it was very typical, a very typical yes. life. There was no, as we all grow up thinking will exist, you know, you meet the love of your life, you get married, and then you embark on your married life together and what comes with that. And that very yes. much felt like my life at that time.
And I'm assuming felt good.
Yeah.
I mean, there's nothing wrong with typical, right? There's, mm-hmm. I think it's lovely to live a life that isn't full of peaks and troughs, you know, one that is kind of more measured mm-hmm. and more balanced. So married life started for you both. Mm-hmm. But something was starting to niggle at you, mm-hmm. right? And around this time, if you're comfortable going there, your husband was mentioning around having poor mental health, and also you'd been experiencing some terrible baby loss. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so I think my husband had always had people use the word demons. I think he wasn't a great drinker, and it would come, those types of feelings and conversations would come out, you know, after a night out or when we got home, and that had existed in our relationship. I wasn't completely blind to it before we got married, but I would say after we got married, that maybe started to happen a bit more often, and those nights out drinking to excess started to happen a bit more. We had started trying for a family. At the time we separated, I'd had three miscarriages. So between marriage and by the time we separated, that was 18 months in terms of a time period. So that was through that period. I was quite private. Not many people knew about that. My best friend did. She was aware. Some through me telling her, others where she questioned. And I said, oh, yeah, actually, it's just happened again. And never too much of a conversation about it. That's the type of person I was. But she was very much aware. So, yeah, it was those things did start to play into life at that time. Again, that didn't take away from, I would say, the overarching just living life, and not it didn't overpower it. You know, that's very sad things to go through, and obviously we were dealing with that. But in terms of our day-to-day life, it still felt like we were on the right trajectory. We were just dealing with a few things along the way.
Right. And that is a deeply personal experience for any individual and any couple. And some people, everyone experiences it in different ways. Some people can be quite matter of fact. Some people can be absolutely consumed by grief, and other people somewhere in the middle. But for you, you say, yeah, clearly recognize it was a sad very sad situation, but it sounds as well that you were able to process it fairly pragmatically, and that it wasn't particularly affecting your relationship. You know, the relationship was still strong. Mm-hmm. And you were saying, obviously, your husband had said he'd had a few issues. And within your relationship at this time, then, would you say you were still, you know, a strong communicative couple?
Yes, I thought so. It felt like there was nothing. I think back, there maybe always felt like there was something that I couldn't understand, but I've never personally suffered from, you know, particularly poor mental health. I can't relate in that sense. So the bit that I didn't quite understand, I put down to my lack of understanding in terms of there being a missing part of the puzzle as such.
How was that characterized in him?
It always felt like, and I understand that people can suffer with poor mental health without real logical reason sitting behind it. But for me, I'm a person of logic. So it felt like to me that there was a part of the story missing. I didn't understand some of the things he would say when he was drunk. They didn't make sense. It almost felt like it was leading back to something, but that wasn't clear what that was leading back to. And then the next day would happen and, you know, he'd sober up and almost life would go back to normal. And
right.
So maybe there was an element of sweeping it under the carpet a little bit. I did offer to support him through getting help or talking to someone, you know, professional. He was not interested, didn't want to. And I respected that. You know, I understand that people have to want that themselves. So all I wanted to do was offer him support as his wife in feeling like if that's what something he wanted to do, I would support him through it, go with him, not go with him. And it wasn't something at the time he wanted to entertain. It would just come out when he'd had a drink and speaking quite ill of himself, speaking, you know, ill [S2] Right. [S1] Of me. I always struggled in social situations because I knew what it would be like when I got home if you'd had too much to drink. Not abusive, not in a sense of physical or even what I would call emotional abuse. It was just not a pleasant experience. So I would be the nagging wife and going, oh, I think you've probably had enough to drink tonight. And everyone would go, oh, let him have another drink. And you'd think, oh, yeah, but you're not at home when I get, you know.
Right.
But I, that sounds like it kind of took over our relationship. It didn't. This was like a once a month thing. It wasn't every night he was going out. He did go to the pub with his friends. That was fine by me. We had lived our separate social lives as well as together. So yeah, I don't.
So it sounds like, it sounds, as you say, fairly typical. But as you say, I mean, yes, there was clearly something that whenever he had drink, and we often know that people who need to either repress, to dampen, or to indeed an outlet can use, you know, drink, drugs as that coping mechanism. And it sounds as though when he was under the influence, yeah, he was expressing some darker feelings, dark thoughts, which may or may not have been connected with what was going on. So at that time, again, you were sort of a bit, okay. But at this point, was there any flags being waved in your face that would make you think that your husband was being unfaithful?
No, not at all. That was zero. I would say through that period, same period of time, isolated was my relationship with my best friend was changing, and I didn't know why.
How was that changing?
So she had just become very, I would say, since the wedding, so progressively over that 18 months, she was more distant. I'm very much the type of person who will always think I've done something wrong first. So for a long time, I was like, you know, what have I done to upset her? We don't seem to be spending as much time together. She doesn't seem to be as keen to talk. Had questioned her a number of times, you know, what have I done or what's wrong? And it was always, no, nothing, everything's fine. And then it would go back to almost being normal again and communication would go back to normal. I was like, oh, okay, fine. And then the cycle would, you know, continue. I spoke to other friends because, as I said, we were part of a bigger social group. I spoke to other friends about it. And they said, oh, don't worry, it's not you. We've noticed that she's being a bit odd at the moment. And then I worried, and I truly worried. I thought there might, something might be going on with her that she didn't feel comfortable talking about. So I did. I asked her that. I said, is there something you don't feel comfortable? You know, I was thinking, is she ill? Is she suffering from poor mental health? Like, whatever's going on, it felt like something, but very much was met every time with, no, everything's fine. And then she would ask to see me again, or she'd come in over and stay at my house. She worked quite near where I lived, so logistically that worked as well. So we'd go out for the evening and then she'd come back and stay. And I thought, oh, okay, everything's normal. We'd gone on a couple of, which become relevant, but we'd gone on a couple of days out or trips out. We'd gone to the Grand Prix, and the three of us, me, my husband and her, through that kind of summer. And then I thought, oh, okay, maybe it's just me. Maybe I'm reading into things wrong. And she says, I kind of have to trust her. She says there's no problem. So yeah, there, and I spoke to my,
what can you do?
And I spoke to my husband a number of times about it, as you do. And he, again, there was no red flags raised at that point. There was nothing that he, you know, he listened, he understood where I was coming from. He didn't necessarily give any words of wisdom, but he, you know, he was an outlet for me to vent my frustrations.
Right, right. And we're often going at such a pace in life as well that we just don't physically, mentally, emotionally have a chance to pause and sit and think and analyze. And also that can often make you go completely mad, to be over analyzing things. But it sounds as though, I mean, our intuition is always very on point. So it sounds as though, as you say, with the benefit of hindsight, possibly there were a couple of like going on, but it also sounds as though there were some master gaslighters amongst us, because one day you happened to go on the Find My Phone app,
so
just to see where your husband is, and this is quite normal within families.
Well, yeah, so it started, what led to that point had started 2 weeks before that. So I'd come down one morning, and he'd got up before me. He was having a form of mental breakdown. He was rocking on the sofa. He was not in a good place. Like, he was not in a good place. And just kept saying that he needed to leave. He needed to have space, which was kind of completely, from my perspective, out of the blue in the context of what I'd already explained, those kind of one-off instances of having a drink. But this was a Sunday morning, sober, and he looked in a bad way. So we'd spoken about it, spoke about how he was feeling. He couldn't articulate, other than saying he needed space, he couldn't articulate any reasons why. He said he wanted to go and stay with a friend. It was a friend that I didn't know. I'd heard of, but didn't know personally. That made me feel uncomfortable. I questioned us at that time. That was the first time that was the first moment I'd questioned us and said, is this us? Is this about us, our marriage, me? He gave me every reassurance he could that it wasn't about us. This was something he was dealing with, his mental health, but he felt like he was feeling suffocated in the house and he just needed a bit of space. So I didn't feel comfortable at all, but I respected that and, you know, took him to the supermarket to buy him lunch for the week for work and tried to like helped him pack a bag and did everything I thought I should be doing as his wife.
Caring wife.
But felt very out of control, very uncomfortable. So that was 2 weeks prior. And then within those 2 weeks, a number of things. So we worked at the same company. He was on a short-term contract that I'd help him get because he'd lost a previous job to tide us over, really, more than anything. So I'd seen him a few times at work. We'd communicated during that period. I was due to go away with work to South Africa in 2 weeks' time. And part of our conversations was around me, how uncomfortable I felt leaving the country with him in the state that he was in. And kind of my deal breaker on that was that he had to speak to his mum and sister about, and because the friend that he was staying with, I didn't know, I didn't feel comfortable. And I felt like if I was going to leave the country with what I believed him to be in such a low place, that I would only feel comfortable doing that if his like mum and sister were aware of that and could support him, which he agreed to. So I was like, okay, that's progress. He'd come round a week before, so the middle weekend, we'd had another conversation, and that was the first time I'd asked him if there was somebody else. it just felt to me, not because there was a reason for me believing there was someone else other than me trying to search for what this situation meant. And I said to him, you've never given me a reason to ask you this before. I feel like I would be naive not to ask. Is there something going on that I'm not aware of? Is this about us? Is there somebody else? And he said, no. He gave me a hug and a kiss. And he's like, this isn't about us or you. There is nobody else. I love you. You're my wife. This is about me. And I said, okay, I won't ask again. I felt like I needed to ask. You've given me an answer. Almost no more needs to be said.
Right.
So a week later, which was the find my friend moment, he had promised me that he was going to go to the doctors, which he'd said he'd done, and then went radio silent. And I was due to go away the following day. So I couldn't get hold of him. He'd switched his phone. Well, he switched his phone off / was not answering.
Which must have been so deeply worrying, because how you're presenting it to me now is a man that, yes, is in a mental health crisis and could possibly do anything. Yeah. And that's definitely how I can hear you were feeling. You were desperately worried he might be doing something, you know, devastating.
That is exactly the place I was in. I was desperately, desperately worried, completely helpless, didn't know where he was. And as the evening went on, was progressively getting more upset and desperate, I guess. And there was something in me that I just thought to myself, and this is something I'd never looked at before, never had I, this situation might have played out differently, but I thought to myself in desperation, I thought, I wonder if he has that Find My Friend app turned on, and then I'd at least know where he was, and, you know, I could help. So I switched it on, and it did. It pinged. I could see where he was, and it was in a town fairly local to here, but not a town that either of us had any, like, there wasn't an instinct connection to. So I'm thinking, right, okay, well, I know where he is, but it was like in a house. It wasn't in the, you know, thank goodness I was looking, it was in the middle of the woods. And that sounds dark, but that's the place I was in at that time. So I was like, right, okay, he's somewhere in a residential road, in a house. Don't know who that house is. And then I can think back to that moment, and it was like everything, my brain figured everything out in a split of a second. So I was logically going through where could he be? Who do we know in that area? And I suddenly remembered that my best friend, she had a family member that lived in that town that she often stayed at, because it was nearer to her workplace. She lived quite far away from work, so in the week it suited her to stay there. And I thought to myself, that's the only person I can think of that I know lives in that area. So I did get a bit detective. I looked online to try and find if I could work out where they lived, found that pretty quickly. And as soon as I saw that was that person's house, I don't know, for not having any suspicion previously, it was like it all just suddenly made sense. I said, right, so they're together. There is only one, in my mind, there was only one reason that they were together. I called a friend at that point. I called him, he didn't answer. And I think I called her actually, again, didn't answer. So I called a friend, explained my thought
Your
process
suspicion.
And my suspicion. She mm-hmm. almost, not in a patronizing way, but almost laughed down the phone and went, oh, like, there's going to be another explanation. I can understand why you've come to this conclusion.
And were you sort of, I mean, what was your emotional state at this point? Were you kind of cool, calm, collected, or were you like frenetic? What the actual F at this point?
Probably a typical swan. I was probably calm on the surface and like thinking what the actual, like underneath and not knowing. I think if I'd have had we shared a car and he had the car. If I'd had a car outside my house, I think I would have got in it and driven to where I could see he was. Because I didn't have that almost instant, yes, I could have called a taxi or, you know, but that thing has a bit more thought process behind it. I think because I didn't do that.
This is an advertisement for BetterHelp. October the 10th is World Mental Health Day, a time to reflect on the importance of mental well-being and the people who help us get there. This year, BetterHelp is flipping the script. Instead of only focusing on our own journeys, we're shining a spotlight on the therapists who guide, listen, and make a real difference in people's lives every day. BetterHelp therapists have supported more than 5 million people worldwide on their mental health journeys. Behind every story of progress is a therapist who asked the right question, offered the right tool, or simply made space for someone to be heard. Personally, one of the most impactful moments in therapy for me was being able to talk to a trained therapist who didn't know me, so had no judgment on me, and just gave me the space to tell my truth. Moments like that are why BetterHelp is honoring therapists this World Mental Health Day. If you've never tried therapy, this is a great moment to start. BetterHelp has more than 30,000 credentialed, experienced therapists worldwide. With over 12 years of experience matching people with the right therapist, they've become the world's largest online therapy platform. This World Mental Health Day, we're celebrating the therapists who've helped millions of people take a step forward. If you're ready to find the right therapist for you, BetterHelp can help you start that journey. Our listeners get 10% off their first month at betterhelp.com/affair. That's betterhelp.com/affair. So to be clear, your suspicions were that he's gone to a house that is connected to your best friend and where you know that she often stays. So your suspicions were leading you to believe at this point, hang on a minute, my husband is with my best friend and therefore this is not looking good for me.
Yeah. And my other friend was saying things like, you know, maybe he's gone round to speak to her because, you know, to try and understand a way to get through to you, and this could be innocent, that my gut told me that that wasn't the case. He knew that my relationship with my friend had become strained, so I thought that that would have been a weird step for him. It just, to me, I knew at that point, how that played out is I messaged him, and said, but it was not a long message at all. I think I said, I know where you are. Come home and give me the explanation that I deserve. I didn't necessarily directly name her. And I also didn't want to tell him how I knew because I wanted to still be able to see where he was. So I stayed awake all night, literally glued to my phone, refreshing the little pin and expecting at some point to see that start moving and see him come home. That didn't happen. So there we are at 6 a.m., 7 a.m. the next morning. I'm due to leave the airport at midday. At that point, I have no answers other than a very strong gut feeling that I know that whatever's coming next is not good. And I was on the phone to a friend talking about it, them trying to kind of calm me down and reason with me, and I feel my phone kind of ping, and I see an email from him pop up. I don't need to tell anyone that when you see an email as a form of communication from your husband is never really going to be a good thing.
Wow.
So I open the email, and that's where I guess all my life completely changed.
What did he, I mean, I'll be honest with you, Becky, I'm listening to this and I can feel this anxious panic emotion in my own chest by proxy. So God, and I never feel that actually, yeah. But my empathy for you in this moment, I think anyone listening to this right now is so walking alongside you right now. So you open up an email from your husband. You've been awake all night thinking, where the hell, what is going on? You can see he's there.
Yeah.
What did the email say?
It was long. It's about 12 paragraphs. I probably know it word for word. It started by saying that he was very sorry, but he had fallen in love with my best friend. So that's kind of first mic drop. But they
all
never
that confirmation.
They never set out to embark on their life together, but that's what's happened. And it was very, very, the whole email was very him playing victim in some way. It wasn't really about me. It was, it's taken him to the darkest moments of his life. And he was truly sorry, but it is what it is. And right. So we go through probably 8 paragraphs of that type of sentiment.
And were you by yourself reading
this?
Yeah.
Yeah.
How the hell did you feel reading this? Like just
numb. I think numb. I remember reading it, but I don't actually truly remember the feeling I had when I read it, other than trying to I guess, digest the words that were in front of me. So we're going through, and as you do when you get something like that, you're kind of skimming it first to try and see where this ends, and then kind of going back up and reading the details. So I'm skimming and we're going through these paragraphs, and then it gets to about, I don't know, paragraph 8, and says, you know, I didn't want to do this to you, and I've been battling these feelings and what to do, and all of that changed when, and it's the word we, I think, that got me at the time reading it, we found out we were pregnant and my life changed. So I'm like, wow, okay.
Hang on. So your best friend is pregnant by your husband and he's just telling you this in an email.
Yeah. And at this point doesn't say anything about, well, he refers in the email, he says that all changed when we found out we were 20 weeks pregnant. That's past tense, the way he's written it. So she's definitely, she's pregnant. But I don't.
And you hadn't seen her?
I hadn't seen her for probably 2 months, 3 months, maybe 2.5, since the summer. This was October, and I'd probably seen her in the August.
So doing the math, you would have seen her pregnant?
A number of times.
So your best friend is sitting there in front of you, having an affair with your husband and pregnant with your husband's baby, and you know none of this.
I don't know she's pregnant. People always say, did you not notice? I probably would have seen her when she was, so how this plays out is that's how the email ended. The actual email ended with, thanks for being a great wife and a great teammate for the last 8 years. Kiss. That's how the email ended, which I actually find quite comical now in a very uncomical way. So I tried to call him. I called him immediately, didn't answer, obviously, because he's a coward. And I text him two things. I just text saying, who knows? And how far pregnant is she? And he texted me back immediately and said, nobody knows. We are having a baby next month. So she was 8 months pregnant. So yes, I would have seen her when she was probably around 6 months is probably the last time. And no, I didn't notice. I can't tell you how she was carrying, but we'd gone out for a meal. She was probably wearing a jumper. She was probably the last person I would have expected to be pregnant. So I wasn't looking for it, but we'll come on to friends, but
I mean, I'm in shock, Becky, and I mean, it's not often that I'm speechless, but oh my god, I can just imagine you sitting with your best friend having lunch, her knowing she's 6 months pregnant with your husband's baby, you having no idea. I mean,
and I think that there are. I'm a fairly accept. I'd like to say I'm a fairly accepting person. I understand that life.
There's a line.
I understand that life isn't black and white. And I also do believe that good people can make bad choices. But right, I think that it's how, when those bad choices or bad decisions are made, how people then act and how it's they choose always, to act. And yes. I think that there are so many, and I think that's what has always upset me about the situation. There were a number of decisions and actions that they both took that lacked morality, integrity, and just a basic level of human respect that profoundly impacted my life, that they didn't have to do. And that's not them having the affair to begin with. That's not even the falling pregnant. That is heart earth-shatteringly heartbreaking, given that I was also trying for a child at the same time. And that's not lost on me. But I think it's the decisions that they made that I will never forgive them for, not the situation they found themselves to be in.
This is really interesting, and I think so well put, actually, Becky, that it's not the act itself, even though obviously, of course, massive underscore, devastating, horrendous. And often this is the case in many ways in life when we have been done wrong things that are immoral or wrong or, you know, disrespectful. It's the reparation. Mm-hmm. It's how we act afterwards. It's how we deal with the consequences of our actions and how we deal with the consequence of our actions and how we repair that to any level, and at a base level, a human respect, common decency, if at the very least, a real heartfelt apology, you know, if nothing else. So I can only imagine how you must be feeling. What about her? So did you speak to her, the friend?
Never spoke.
You've never spoken to your friend?
So that happened that morning. I got on the plane to South Africa because I didn't have much other choice. Like, it felt, everything felt too rushed to make a decision not to go. It was a work trip. And I truly did think, that my life isn't going to change whether I get on that flight or not. This has happened. And to be honest, that was probably the best thing I did. I got out of the country. And the best way to describe it is I felt like I was in the epicenter of a bomb that went off. There were so many people involved. And that's the other thing. It's not just, yes, I was the center of that story and it was my life, but so many other people were impacted. Our friends, our family, my friendship circle. We worked at the same company, so my work was affected for a short period of time. It felt all consuming, if I'm honest.
The with affairs, as we know, the blast zone is wide. It really is. When these when the affairs get blown, as you say, in the epicenter, it's huge. And I say, I think the probably with hindsight, as you say, the best decision was to get some distance from that, just to collect your thoughts. You talk about the friendship group as well. What was going on with that? Just to add to this layered pain that you were experiencing.
Yeah, so I think on the way to the airport, I text pretty much everyone I knew and told what had happened because that was my control. I felt like I didn't want to be a gossip. I didn't want to be someone that kind of people whispering in the school playground type approach. I thought, right, nothing's going to change. They're having a baby and that is the case. So I text everyone. What transpired was that two girls in the group, that a group of eight of us were aware, they knew. So my best friend had told them maybe a couple of months prior. I hadn't seen either of them since they were...
What had she told them?
She had told them, as far as I'm aware, through the conversations I've subsequently had with them, she told them as much as there was to know without the detail, in terms of not detail around the affair, but they were aware that she was pregnant by my husband's child. That in itself, so difficult to deal with. I think we all like to think that we would know what we would do if we were faced with that information. I don't blame them for not telling me. I understand. Doesn't mean that I wasn't hurt by it, but I understand that they were put in a very uncomfortable, impossible situation that they didn't ask to be put into, and it shouldn't have been down to them to effectively blow my life up.
It's a very tricky one.
Very tricky. And I would say that I'm closer to both of them now, and over a number of years, than I probably was then. That's taken a lot of rebuilding and...
I'm pleased you have, actually. And I say everyone has their own thoughts and opinions and your feelings around that. And those friends are absolutely yours and valid. But I guess from a completely disconnected point of view over here, I think it's interesting to look at, and when I deal with couples, to look at that responsibility that have been placed on those two innocent, unconnected. Mm-hmm. Well, they were connected, but not connected within the emotional circle. And almost your ex-husband and your best friend had almost then offloaded and dumped onto them that responsibility of spreading that toxic news. And it was an unenviable position for anyone to be in, but arguably not your friend's position to own. But equally, as you say, and I've also been in a position where I have had information on a friend's partner being unfaithful, and it's a very horrible situation to be in, because as you say, you are then holding information where you feel conflicted, because you're like, I love this person and the right thing to do, because if I was in that situation, I would want to know. But then equally you're like, but I am now going to be the one that's going to push explode on their lives. And that's a very unfair position for anyone to be put in, but it doesn't take away your feelings towards that too, because I think they are extremely valid.
Yeah, and I think that's how I approached it. It was very raw to begin with, and obviously so there were so many opinions, and that was overwhelming. There were so many people involved and so many opinions that I and people trying to navigate their own, what their own lives look like, and, you know, friendships, and trying to work out if they could be friends with her, and wanting to seek comfort from me and almost reassurance. And like, if we're still friends with her, can we still be friends with you? That's very like playground-esque, but the sentiment was there. And I just withdrew. I tried to be honest as I could with my feelings to everybody. And I said, look, I can't give you answers I don't know yet. All I can say is you need to figure out you. I will be here figuring out me, and what that looks like in 6 months' time will just be what it looks like, and we'll have to navigate that. I can't give you the reassurance. I can't tell you that I'm going to be okay with you having a relationship with her. You know, you can only do what you feel comfortable with, and we just have to deal with the impact of that. And if that means I have to withdraw myself, then that's what I'll do. But I can't. There were no answers at that time. I just had to go right through the motions of
right,
and that's what it was, emotions.
And you can't be protecting, unfortunately, other people's emotions and feelings at that point, where absolutely you have to be in a place of self-protection. And it sounds as though actually you'd articulated your way in a very measured way, considering all of the absolute devastation you were feeling. So bringing it up to kind of, you know, the initial aftermath and where we are here, and you say you've never spoken to your best friend since. Do you know anything about what's happened in their life?
Yeah, so I chose, when I was away, I thought I would come back and I would have this conversation with my husband that I was probably deserved to begin with. And then when I actually thought about it, I thought to myself, I have a number of questions. Of course I do, but you always would in that situation. But am I ever going to get the answers? Can I trust anything that he says? No. So whether that's right or wrong, I don't know. But I decided that I didn't want to speak to him and seek those answers. And the way I dealt with it was I thought of all my questions, thought about what the worst answer to all of them could be, and that became my base. Now, whether that was the truth or not, I had some communication with him because we owned a house together. We were married, so we had to... I had to go through the process of trying to buy him out and divorce, and there's communication to some degree across that. And with that communication came, you know, some emotional chat, but always over message, never on the phone, never face to face. He dropped a bit of paperwork around my house one day. That was the only time I saw him face to face afterwards.
How did you feel when you saw
him? Awful. I didn't want to see him. He knocked on the door. I thought it was someone else. I opened it and saw him and quickly closed it. I didn't want to deal with that. Never had any communication with her. She never reached out. And look, sorry would never have been enough. So I didn't really feel like
it would have been
needed
something.
Her apology, but it felt absent that there wasn't anything. I wrote her a letter. It was probably about 9 months later. We shared the same birthday or the date. She has a birthday the day before me, so we'd gone through life celebrating our birthdays together, and it was our 30th birthday. That the following birthday was our 30th. I wrote her a letter on her birthday, sharing my truth and sharing how her actions had affected me. It felt unfair that she was never fake just because she'd never apologized or never came face to face with me. It felt unfair that she never had to understand the impact that her decisions made on my life. And I felt like I needed that as my closure. I actively said I didn't want a response. I didn't get one, and that's fine. I didn't write it to get into a dialogue. I did it very much to, and I thought very carefully about what I said in that letter over a number of weeks. And I still to this day mean everything I said in it. It wasn't written in haste, or it was measured. It was brutal, but it was measured.
It was a purge, and I always say this with my clients, particularly when you feel silenced and stonewalled, which you had, and then you're left carrying all of these emotions and feelings. Don't get me wrong, there will absolutely have been all kinds of emotions over there, but that is not your concern or your worry, because that is not your story. And I'm sure whatever went on over there went on, and probably still is, who knows. But as you know, yeah, you can only control and do what you can. And actually, it is a very cathartic process to get down pen on paper everything you're feeling and experiencing, and having your voice when you feel so silenced from the person that you actually want to deliver that to. I mean, how do you feel? Like, probably a tricky one, because this has been a few years now,
yeah,
hasn't it?
Yeah. I think
How do you feel about them both now? Yeah. Honestly.
I think that they, people always ask me, I think they're still together. That's my understanding and my belief. I think they've gone on to have another child. And people ask me sometimes, does it make it better to know that they are still together or worse? And I truly feel indifferent. It doesn't feel like whether they're together for the rest of their lives or they'd broken up immediately after the after it all came out, it still doesn't change the way they treated me. So it's almost immaterial to me. It doesn't make it worth it or not. I don't think I ever need to forgive them. I'm not one of these people that feels like I need to forgive to move on. I don't think they deserve my forgiveness. Doesn't mean I can't move on with my life, but I don't think that forgiveness needs to play a part. There is an element of me. So we're probably seven years later after that kind of bombshell went off, and which is, you know, a long time I'm now in my kind of, I'm 36, so it's creaking on early, late 30s. I'm not in a relationship. I don't have a child. And that's very hard to switch off. I was ready to have children at that point, and I think that was probably the hardest thing to deal with of everything, is not being able to, your situation might change around you. And I liken it a lot to being on a snakes and ladder board and being at the number 99 and getting that long snake that slides you right down to the beginning. But your core, your how you feel inside, especially as a woman, that doesn't change. And that hasn't changed. You know, I would still love to have children one day. Is it going to be part of my life? I don't know. And I can't hold them accountable for how I've lived my life since. Absolutely not. And that's not what I intend to do. But if I think if I'm being truthful, if I never have children, I think I will always resent them for that. I feel like they robbed me of my 20s, and I feel like there will always be a bitterness that I will carry. Is that fair? I don't know. But if I'm being truthful to how I feel, it felt like she came in, picked up my life and took it, and took everything that came with that.
I think often when we try and find, and I can hear you, bless you, trying to grapple for that sort of soothe to some of the really raw emotions you're feeling. And actually sometimes sometimes you do reach, you know, a point where actually toxic positivity serves you no purpose, you know, by, you know, trotting out, you know, oh, but you know what, you know, at least I'm not with him, which is, you know, I'm sure hopefully beneficial in some ways. You're also perfectly allowed to just sit in that trench, as I'm sure you have, and also to be comfortable with feeling, I resent them. I resent what they have done to part of my life, without having to grapple for the reasoning of, I don't know if that's fair or not, because all that's doing is piling on more pressure to you to have to, in inverted commas, feel a certain way. I think it's perfectly, essentially what you're experiencing, Becky, is grief and loss for what happened, for what would have been, what won't ever be in some area of your life. And grief and loss is always a journey. So would you say, I know you haven't met anybody yet, but do you feel open and ready to meet someone new?
I do.
Is that part of your plan?
That is part of my plan. I do. I know I have a lot of love to give. I would love to be in it.
And may I say, you're an absolute stunner.
Oh, thank you.
Like, stunning. Not that matters, but you're an absolute whopper, stunner, honestly.
Thank you. Yeah, I would. I know that over the last 6-7 years, I've put myself, you know, we might not act in the necessarily change the way we act, but I have a fair amount of self. I understand myself enough to know that I put myself in situations that, you know, situationships, because I'm protecting myself from being hurt again. I can see that I do that. I can see that pattern. So, and I think you do spend a lot of your time when things like that happen, or certainly I did. It was very much a why me? Why was she better? Why was she the choice? And I, you know, over time, I think time is a healer in that respect. And you do go, no, I wasn't the problem. It wasn't me. It wasn't someone being chosen over me, but there was one thing that I probably did helped that closure. And it was probably about 6 months after everything had happened, I'd looked at something on Twitter. I'd opened up Twitter. I don't use Twitter, or X is it now called. and I'd opened it up to find something my brother had asked me to look at, actually. And when I'd logged in, I realized I was logged in as him. He'd obviously been on my phone. You know, when you're on your phone and someone's logged in as you. Curiosity. I was like, oh, I don't even know people use that kind of platform to communicate with people in terms of messaging. But curiosity got the better of me, and I opened up the messages, and I was faced with hundreds of messages that he had recently. So within that, the 2 week period prior, so very much after our relationship had ended, after his child had been born, you know, he's living his new life as such, hundreds of messages to various X-rated accounts of pictures of himself, videos of himself, trying to meet up with people. So, and I, yeah. And that to me, honestly, was closure.
Vindication.
It was closure. It was what I needed. I needed to see that it wasn't me. It was him. He was one of the problems. I'm not, you know, not absolving her from her responsibilities in this, but I don't know. I can't describe the feeling I felt when I saw that. It was what I needed to be able to kind of draw a line in that kind of self-depreciating pattern I was in. And I screenshot them all, and I was ready to send them all to her. I think at one point drafted an email, and then I stopped and I thought, you know what? It's not worth it. She's chosen that life, and she can find out or not find out. However her life plays out is how it plays out. And I don't want to be the one that it didn't feel necessary, I was close to it. Yeah. You know, I was close to paying that woman scorned a number of times, but
you know what you've done in that very act there, Becky, you stopped the cycle. Mm. What would you like people to take away from this episode? What would you like people to know or learn about affairs?
Your decisions that people can make are that life isn't black and white. People fall in love with other people. People can love two people at the same time. I believe, but it's how you choose to act upon that, or as you say, put right wrong decisions, and how you treat other people at the core. If you're a good person deep down and you make a bad choice, you can still choose to minimize the impact. Doesn't mean that you haven't done a bad thing. Doesn't mean that you won't upset someone or impact someone's life in a negative way, but you can try and minimize the impact. There are so many things in my story that made it so much worse, and it didn't need to play out like that.
Can I also ask, is there anything that you would have done differently?
No, I truly believe that. I've had a number of years now to reflect on everything that happened and how everything played out. Would I have done anything differently? I probably wouldn't have got into a relationship with him. And that is being truthful. People always say, oh, but that's your life. And I would, if I had the choice, I would save myself from all the hurt that I went through and not got into that relationship in the first place. And yes, that's taking a big chunk of my life away. But unfortunately, that's where I sit. But in terms of how I acted through, or how, well, you can only control yourself, right? So how I acted through everything, would I change how I acted, how I received information? No, because I truly believe I acted with integrity through it. So.
And that, my friend, brings inner peace.
Yeah.
Becky, I have really enjoyed talking to you today, albeit around such a powerfully emotional topic. But you're smiling, which is great. And I just want to say thank you for sharing your experiences. And I know I speak from everyone that's listening to this as well, that there will be nothing but love coming at you, and everybody wishing you the future that you absolutely richly deserve.
Thank you. Thank you so much for giving the platform to tell my story as well.
Thank you for listening to the Affair podcast. If you've been affected by any of the issues raised in today's episode, please see the show notes for organisations who can offer support and advice. Don't forget to subscribe so you are the first to know when a brand new episode drops. But until then, I'm Anna Williamson, and this has been The Affair. The Affair is hosted by me, Anna Williamson, produced by Naomi Channel, and is a Curve Sounds production.